magical place we could go. So close your eyes and make a wish for the skies with the angriest, flappiest birds, and the seas with ridiculous fish. The Dutch Arcade Show is here again. It's Friday night and I'm with my friends Eli, Jerry, and Mike most of the time. Come on, let's go to the Dutch Arcade Show.
Hey guys, what's up? You're listening to Touch Arcade Show's episode number 364, recording on, what is this, August 3rd, 2018. Jared is off in Sweden at some event for a King.com game, which...
What? Nice.
Interesting. Yeah, so today I've got Noodle Cake Ryan joining me, or Ryan Noodle Cake,
I Hello, guess. Hello, everybody.
Is your full name, right?
Noodle Ryan, Ryan Noodle Cake, whatever, yeah. Whatever you want to call me, it's fine.
Yeah, so I guess if people don't know Noodle Cake and you're listening to the Touch Arcade podcast, I would say that's a little strange. But do you want to give a little little background on the company, I guess?
Yeah, sure. I mean, Noodle Cake is a indie game studio and publisher. We kind of dipped our toes in the water of iOS development way back in the day. Probably best known for a Stick Golf series, or Super Stickman Golf as it's now known. Launched those games to pretty moderate success, kind of built off that, and then we got into this whole thing where we started porting games over to Android for indie developers who are friends of ours, and then that kind of bootstrapped itself into this like pseudo publishing division where we were helping launch indie games on Google Play and different Android platforms. And eventually it kind of grew to the point where we were launching so many games and so often and well enough, I guess, that the developers came to us and were just like, hey, why don't you handle all the publishing, do it on iOS and Android? And then so we kind of pivoted a little bit into more of a traditional, like, mobile pub in that sense. Traditionally,
oh, so you guys
we helped
did
launch
the,
games, not very traditional.
You did the Android stuff before you yep. kind of switch into publishing? That's interesting.
Yeah, well, it kind of went one together. Like, we took, there was two different models we could have done with this. There was another company that had a very similar tech that allowed us to basically run native iOS code on Android, and they kind of went the tech licensing model where they just gave the developers access to the technology and let them self-publish. We went the other route because we had our own first-party games we wanted to help promote. We figured that, you know, this is at the time when, you know, games like Draw Something and stuff were getting acquired for obscene amounts of money because they had so many active users. We were like, well, let's build our active user base. So instead, the deal we cut was, hey, we'll port your game for free, and then we'll just take a rev share. But the catch is it's published under our name. And then that way, as things grow, we can self-publish our own stuff to the store and then, like, have all these users to market to, and then each new game that comes out subsequently gets access to a bigger and bigger player base. So that's kind of how, that was kind of the impetus of it all, and then it pushed into, you know, multi-platform publishing. I mean, we pushed Suzy Cube onto Steam and stuff, so now we're kind of branching into all platforms.
Is that your first Steam game?
With more console quality games. Yeah, it was. We have a couple more coming in the pipeline that we've been working on for a while. That was the first one that actually made it through to production, and looking at doing some console stuff too. In talks with Nintendo with some Switch stuff, getting PS4 stuff up and running, you know, just kind of expanding. Our roster of games is kind of growing to a different caliber these days where we're getting pitched some more and more. Sometimes we get pitched a game, we're like, why did they pitch this to us? It's like, we're a mobile publisher. So it's cool, though. We're starting to see some pretty cool stuff come down the pipeline.
That's really, so with Suzy Cube being a multi-platform release, where did you guys see the most traction, like iOS, Android, Steam, or was it kind of even?
iOS probably was the biggest, just because it was, you know, I mean, you know, Louis yeah. was developing the game as a mobile game first, and we pushed him to kind of say, you know what, this is good enough that we can put this on console and PC and stuff too. So we tried to go, and you know how the stigma is, right? If we would have launched it on mobile first, launched it on Steam, we would have got shredded as a shitty baby mobile game. Instead, we made sure that we launched it at least in parity, so we kept that down a little bit. There were still some reviews that were like, oh, I'm pretty sure this is just a mobile game, but you know,
yeah,
it
you guys
ended
find
up being
that,
a little bit more.
Did like the negativity surrounding that get much traction that you guys saw, or was it just a few curmudgeons here and there that you know?
Yeah, just a few salty guys here and there. I mean, the people who picked it out were like, oh, it's because they don't have, like, full controller mapping options and the resolution settings aren't as, like, detailed as they could be. So this obviously is a mobile game first. Like, that's it takes that level of digging into it. So I don't know. I think in the end it was a good call to launch it together, because then we actually got quite a bit of traction with some Steam YouTubers and things like that, reviewers and stuff, and they all quite like the game a lot. So it definitely is as good as the game is on mobile and how, you know, amazing his control scheme is. It still is one of those games that, like, just is a little bit better still with the controller. So yeah. it fit itself really well.
Did you guys do the same price?
So yeah, I mean, that's kind of
everything on that.
Similar. We're a little higher on Steam because that's kind of the standard.
Yeah.
We did launch with a discount, so it was roughly within like $1 of the mobile version. So tried to keep it on parity for the first little bit anyways. Everything else, because we looked at the pricing of like Crashlands and all these other games that did the co-launches across, right, and pretty much unanimously they were, you know, $3 to $5 more expensive on Steam. So we just kind of stuck with that model. So
yeah, that's super wild. So when you guys got your start, do you think it was Flappy Golf that put you on the map, do you think it was Super Stickman Golf, or was it like the explosion of Flappy Golf, or kind of both, that like really catapulted Noodlecake?
Different people. I mean, the Super Stickman Golf series, no doubt, is what like formed the company. When we put the real-time multiplayer in the first Super Stickman Golf, like that's what like literally sparked that's why I'm here talking to you right now. We had editors at E3 were like playing the game during Judges Week with each other and talking about how it was like the game of show, even though we weren't even there. Like, we were just at our office in Saskatoon being like, what the hell is going on? Why are like IGN and stuff tweeting about Super Stickman Golf like 6 years ago, right? So that was kind of the thing that really kind of pushed us forward. Flappy Golf was one of those things that, like, as you know, started as a joke, essentially, it was during the whole Flappy Jam stuff, and we did it as more of an homage. And I think it was even at GDC when you guys were like, you need to release this. This is like actually good.
It was really fun.
So we did, and it took off in its own, like, we had more of a demographic that leaned a little bit older, I think, and that really gave us the like teenager demo, because everyone and the kids were playing in school and that sort of stuff. So it kind of opened up this whole different world of kids who were playing the game, and they had no association with Noodlecake or the Super Stickman Golf series. So we've even had instances where because it's the same assets reused, it's just a different gameplay mechanic. We've had people playing Flappy Golf emailing our support or tweeting at us telling us that someone has ripped off Flappy Golf and made a stick golf game. And so it's like, well, obviously they don't know how this all came to be, but I would say that really like pushed our first party like user base pretty high. We've had a lot of like mini hits here and there from the publishing side too, which has kind of kept the ball rolling. Things like, you know, Bouncy Hoops, Chameleon Run, and Bitcoin Billionaire, all these kind of stuff. So over the years we have, there's usually one or two big ones a year for us that kind of take off. So,
yeah, I still use Bitcoin Billionaire as like one of the best examples to point to when it comes to like implementing incentivized ads, because like the way that you guys did that was just like delightfully on the nose. You know, like a lot of games that do incentivized ads kind of like try to obscure it a little bit or other things like that. Whereas yours was like very much like, no, watch this ad, you idiot, and get, you know, this bonus. Like, this is what's happening.
Clicking this will put a banner up on your screen. It's going to happen. There's no question, but it gives you cool shit. So, I mean, we weren't beating around the bush with that stuff. So, it was good. And I mean, now we're kind of at a point where our publishing has kind of taken over as like the main de facto part of not the company in general. Like, the first party team is still crushing out stuff right now. We don't do as many like one-off ports anymore as we used to. Like, back in the day, we were just porting and launching on Google Play, which is why we have so many games on Google Play compared to iOS. But now we still do that, but it's kind of more for the higher end iOS games that still don't want to deal with Android, if you will. So, you know, for the most notably, we just did Altus Odyssey. You know, we worked with them on Adventure. You know, we'll do kind of one-off stuff like that. You know, we recently took over the Sword and Sorcery account from Capybara to help them like support the legacy of that game. You know, Lumino City, like these bigger kind of more tentpole iOS releases that the team still doesn't quite have the capabilities to deal with Android.
Yeah.
You know, Bennett Foddy, we did like Getting Over It, that kind of stuff. So that's kind of our, how we do our one-off stuff. Pretty much everything Zach Gage does comes through our pipeline. The rest of the time though, if it's a one-off, you know, we're usually not as interested in doing it as much as we are to try and do a full, you know, scale release, because there's a little bit more value in it for us to do both.
Yeah. So I guess for anyone listening that doesn't really know the like Android, the challenges of releasing the Android game, can you just kind of like walk through like why a developer would have you guys port it, and like the kind of stuff that you do that would just be like too much for, you know, like effectively like the Zach Gages of the world, like the one man indie shop, to even deal with?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest issue, well, I mean, there's a litany of issues, but one of the biggest ones is obviously device fragmentation. It's just, it's one thing, you know, yeah, Unity and these other platforms support Android out of the box now, but to deal with the amount of parity in the devices is insane. I mean, you're getting budget phones in India that have like, they're like $89 phones that have crap hardware inside of them, but they're brand new phones, right? So people are dealing with, you know, that there's multiple resolution sizes, there's you know, the touch controllers on the screens might be different, the internals like CPU and RAM and stuff is all over the map on these devices. So when you're trying to test and launch, and plus they don't, the adoption rate for the Android operating system isn't nearly as high as iOS, so you're dealing with, you know, we're dealing with people that are still on Android 4 and they're on like 8 now. So it's, you know, you're all over the place when it comes to support issues. So a lot of times these small indie teams just, they don't have the know-how to get the game up and running cleanly on enough devices. Like, we can support about 95% of the market, which is, you know, a huge number of devices right now. Because we kind of work backwards, you know, we kind of know that the new stuff is going to work decently well, but it's like those weird garbage phones from 5 years ago that, when, you know, that's the stuff that can cause all the headaches. So a big part of that is, yeah, like we can go through and we can rip all the, you know, support stuff. We handle all the support for all the indie developers, so they don't see any of that. They don't get, you know, the hundreds of emails that poor Derek has to deal with every day.
What's like a typical support request for you guys through the Android channels?
Game doesn't work, fix. Yeah. That's pretty much it.
Please fix
that. That's about the extent of the information we get. You know, so it's, but it really depends. I mean, right now we're dealing with Altos Odyssey. We've got this crazy audio bug that's like killing new devices, not old devices. So we're having problems with like the audio plugin that the Snowman team used for the game isn't jiving well with like new Android devices and causing all these sound problems. And it's just like, you know, being able to vet and find that information and deal with it is not easy, because once you launch to, once you deploy to iPad, iPhone, and iPhone 10, you just kind of dust your hands off and walk away, you know. Yeah. But now it's like, it's so much more. And then on top of that, if you want to start talking about like releasing in international markets and getting into, you know, stores that aren't Google Play and launching in China and that kind of stuff, and they're dealing with primarily Android only. So there's a whole international aspect of launching on Android, not Google Play specifically, that we help out with now too, due to, you know, our deal with Zplay, who kind of helps along with some of the publishing in China, and we kind of have a pipeline going on there, and just, you know, the support of a million storefronts, which is just daunting when you're dealing with one game and you have one guy.
Yeah.
So
how many Android devices do you guys have in the office to test on?
100 and some, probably.
Yeah. You just haven't been like, like, I don't know. This is like a giant basket of Android junk.
Essentially. Jeez. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, we have every shit console you've ever heard of, and devices, we're at a point now too where if any like hardware manufacturer is like, hey, we want to feature you on this like weird ass Samsung thing that we're doing, we'll be like, cool, send us a device first. And then so they send us one and then we check it out, but we never, you know, we just go buy it. It's like, oh, the Pixel 2 is causing grief in the X game, we'll run down to the mall and buy it, put it on the shelf. So it's, you know, we kind of got to keep pace with that stuff. So yeah, the testing is, we have a ton. There's just a pile of them. I don't even know, to be honest, how many we have. Wow. I'd say over 100 for sure.
So you guys are always like, it seems like you're always popping up in like the local Canadian newspapers and stuff. Like why is it that people seem to love Noodle Cake so much in your area?
I would say locally, because there's nobody else making games in Saskatchewan. I mean, there's, if you're not in Vancouver or Toronto or Montreal, those are kind of the hotbeds of game development in Canada. And where we are, it's like, it's a flyover state essentially. So they don't really, when there is a success story to be had of any kind with gaming around here, it's always like, oh, did you know they're doing this here in Saskatchewan? No, that's crazy. So I think that helps a little bit. I don't know. We get good love from, like, I got good relationships with Apple and stuff, and we get on their radar a lot. So they like to feature us and do cool things with, like, they did that Best Game Makers in Canada last year. They featured us heavily for that. I think we were the first ones that got featured in that. So I don't know. We're just so likable, I think. That's all. You know, you just be nice guys, and people like to throw you a bone.
It's surprising how well that works out.
Yeah, it's amazing, right? Don't be a dick to people. And it's funny how the world can treat you.
Yeah, geez, no kidding. So are you guys like the premier like tech employer for Saskatoon right now? Because you've grown substantially.
I would say no, but we're the funnest. So it's like, there's actually quite a bit of tech going on here. It's surprising the community that's been built up, especially with like lack of government support and stuff. It's like, oh, if you don't grow wheat or drill for oil, we don't really care about you, is how the government kind of looks at businesses around here.
Nice.
But the tech community is kind of growing on its own. There's some big companies around here that have hundreds of people that are doing tons of weird stuff, from like kind of like Uber Eats style, like stuff started here that got acquired by Just Eat, which is a really big version of that stuff. There was I don't know, there's some kind of like social media management companies that's got like hundreds of people. It's all tech stuff. And so there's some big companies.
You guys are like 30 or 40 right now, something like that.
Not even, man. The game side is only about 15.
Oh, really?
We have two divisions, which technically aren't even real divisions anymore. So we used to have a consulting division that did this like health and care scheduling software. That company has been entirely broke off. Even though they're still in the same building with us, we're not on the books, but they're not the same company anymore. With the Zplay stuff, they didn't want any part of that company. So it kind of got broke off entirely. But so our side's only got 15. The consulting division has about 15-ish or so. So there is 30 total, but actually working on game stuff, yeah, there's only 15 of us, and half of them are dedicated to first party too. So the pub team is like, you know, 8 people.
That's
so
pretty wild. I mean, like, how is it that you guys think you can get so much done with so few people when you look at companies like, you know, Zynga and CrowdStar and like all those other like West Coast iOS dev/publisher outfits that have just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people that are working there?
Yeah, I'd say it's a combination of things. We pride ourselves on working smart, not hard. I mean, we work hard, very much so. Guys put in some long shifts when we need to, but I don't know. We don't waste our time on shit we know isn't going to make sense. It isn't going to make money. And so we really got good at prioritizing what's important in a launch. And the types of games we're doing, I don't think require the teams as much. I mean, we're dealing with kind of one-off indie games that are either like Gasfire high score chasers, or, you know, like cool little experimental premium games or things like that. They don't require the depth of like the games as a service style companies where you're super selling and you have these constant things happening. That being said, we do have some stuff coming down from first party that's going to be dipping more into that, and we'll see. I mean, if the next iterations of these games we're working on have huge communities and we need to hire, you know, 5 or 6 community support people, and then suddenly we need to hire, you know, content creators and stuff for keeping up these like live ops and all the, you know, funny buzzwords that everybody loves to use these days, then maybe we'll go down that road. But right now it's more a matter of like, you know, we work with the indie developer, we help them get the game to a launchable state, we put in some sort of marketing plan, we deal with Apple and Google and stuff. I mean, we're working on shoestring budgets compared to some of these companies. We're not, you know, we don't have millions of dollars to dump into user acquisition, and we wouldn't do that unless the game made sense either. So, you know, we don't spend money on that kind of stuff initially. We're kind of more of the, like, our services are tech oriented first. We'll help you get your product out there and make it as good as it can be. You know, we've got game developers here. We make games. We touch a lot of games, so we know kind of that, like, you know, the secret sauce of, like, why game X feels good and game Y feels like shit and it's the same game. It's like, you know, we kind of lean on the side of kind of knowing how to make your game feel better, game feel, which is always a hard thing. So, I don't know, we're very product focused. We help make a really good game first, and then we just kind of let the market dictate everything after we do the big launch and the push and all that sort of stuff. So,
yes.
I don't know. It's, everybody's amazed. Everybody thinks we have 100 people here for the amount of content we're putting out, and we don't. I don't know. We've just kind of figured it out, I guess. I don't know. It's a weird thing.
So you guys built the I remember you announced this like last year-ish, maybe the year before, the Noodle Cake kind of like cloud-based gaming stuff. What was I don't remember what the name for that was. It was
it was very cleverly called NC Game.
Yeah. So that was like basically you're doing the logic of the game on your servers instead of like depending on clients, like trusting clients back and forth and multiplayer stuff. Like, where's all that stuff right now?
That has been like, that's the push. That's why there's been like, you know, radio silence from us as like a developer standpoint, is because we spent so much time actually getting the software up and running and this tool chain and everything. And now we're building games on top of that. So we have two first party games that are coming down the pipeline. They should probably, one should come out this year and the other one might be early next year, that are going to be utilizing this stuff. I don't know how into I can get what they are and how they work, but one of them, I mean, the one we kind of teased a little bit already, that the next iteration of Super Stickman Golf, because of the fact that it's so multiplayer heavy, these games, right, that we're implementing a little bit more, you know, in-depth multiplayer that's going to be very server-based, but have things like tournaments and trophies and, you know, groups and all that kind of stuff. So it's going to be a little bit more in that Clash, you know, Royale vein of multiplayer experience with the stick golf flair. So that's been kind of the big push for the last little bit. So we should have some stuff coming out. We'll have two big releases in the next 4 to 6 months, probably, coming from our team.
Are you guys at all concerned about scaling that if the next Super Stickman Golf is just like unbelievably successful? I mean, because it seems like if you're running the logic of the game on servers, like that scales well based on, you know, maybe hundreds of thousands of users, right? But like when you reach hundreds of millions of users, that seems like it becomes extremely substantial to deal with / pay for.
If we have hundreds of millions of users, we'll figure it out.
Yeah, that's a good problem to have.
It's a good problem to have. I mean, if we have hundreds of millions of users, that means we're at least making some money so we can pay to find the solution. I mean, I don't know. Our Amazon server costs will probably go through the roof, but whatever. We'll figure it out. It's you know, Supercell did it. I'm not. Right, yeah. You know, they seem to be. I think we can. I think if we can reach any level of success that is like, oh shit, things are melting down, then that's good. We'll figure it out.
So basically, you're saying if you believe in the future of Noodle Cake, buy Amazon stock now.
Potentially, unless we switch over to Google Cloud. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what the final is going to be, but
cool. Yeah. Well, do you guys have anything coming up that you want to pimp on the podcast, or should we switch gears to talking about Fortnite stuff?
Co-launch next week, iOS, Android. We haven't done a full like push to you guys or anybody yet about it, but Sneak Ops, the game you saw at GDC, like kind of infinite sneaking game. It's not really infinite. It's more like Leap Day meets Metal Gear is kind of the easy pitch, even though I hate using the this meets that analogy. But it's like every day is a brand new sneaking mission. It's top down, kind of the old school Metal Gear. You kind of work your way through zones and stuff. It's actually really slick. Anybody that's a fan of like stealth sneaking games and stuff will really enjoy it. So that should be coming out on Thursday. So we're just kind of finalizing the last touches with the stores and everything right now.
Yeah, cool. That game was really fun at GDC. I'm stoked for that. So
yeah, it's gonna be sweet.
So yeah, the big news of the week was
as of today.
I got pre-briefed on this a while ago, so I've been like waiting to talk about this. So effectively, Fortnite launched on iOS earlier this year now? It's been a few months.
Yeah, it'd be a few months now. Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, of course, it's just doing gangbusters. You know, it seems like it's doing so well that, like, I see in my Twitter feed, like, people retweeting, like, CNBC and, like, Forbes and stuff like that, like, just discussing the finances of the game, because it's just, like, so unbelievable how much money they're making and so quickly on mobile. But the trick was it was only on iOS. And, you know, of course it's coming to Android. Like, there's no reality that exists where this game wouldn't eventually come to Android.
Yeah.
But, you know, the question was always when. And no one ever really raised the question of how, right? It was just kind of assumed like, well, of course it's going to be on Google mm-hmm. Play or, you know, WeChat and China or, you know, like whatever else, right?
Yeah.
But to make things more interesting, like before this announcement and everything else, like there was just a countless amount of different scam apps for people to get Fortnite and Android. Like the kind of shit that, because we would get like notified of them, like, hey, you should post about this to warn people. And it was like, dude, if we posted about every Fortnite scam that was happening, God. It would be like Touch Arcade would be like FortniteScamWatch.com, which probably should be a website that someone should make.
I was gonna say probably not a bad idea.
Yeah. Because like, oh my God, you know, because you know the Wild West that like Google Play and Android can be, right? So there'd be like mm-hmm. these YouTube videos where it's like download this Fortnite downloader app and do these like 10 things, but it's like effectively watch 10 ads and fill out a survey sort of thing, you know, like. Effectively making whoever put up the scam app like probably like 50 cents to a dollar for
all the crap. Yeah, he probably made more money than he should have.
Yeah, ever. No, like it's just an offensive amount of money. Because like these videos were insane. Because it was like, all right, here's what you do. You download this thing on Google Play. You watch this ad. You click next. You have to fill out this whole survey, put your address in and stuff. And it was just like,
oh God.
Unbelievable amount of stuff. And like you'd look at these videos and they'd have like 2 million views. You know, so. So Fortnite Android is at a sky-high excitement level because most people in the world just have Android phones. I mean, you know, Apple is pretty big, but, you know, Android...
Not out of the U.S. Yeah,
no, exactly. So the way that Epic is bringing Fortnite to Android is they are, like, extending both of their middle fingers to all the platforms and just saying, you know what, fuck you guys, we're just going to do it ourselves. So they're doing this through the thing that I feel like is kind of confusingly named. They're calling it the Fortnite Installer, which seems kind of weird. I feel like, right? Like, doesn't it seem like it should be like the Epic Launcher?
A little bit.
Or, because
it should
PC,
be a launcher. Because, I mean, that's the name, like the nomenclature is Launcher, X Launcher, right?
Yeah. Because on PC, it is like the Epic Launcher or something like that is how you download Fortnite on the PC, which seems really strange that they decided to go with like the installer nomenclature. But anyway, when this is finally released, like you'll basically just go to Fortnite.com. It'll see that you're loading it up on an Android phone and it'll be like, hey, do you want to download the Fortnite installer? And you'll have to, presumably it'll walk you through how to allow third party sources and stuff, which is basically just going into your Android settings and, your security stuff and checking that you want to install foreign APKs. You download that and then it just installs the game. And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
By doing that, they are keeping 100% of the revenue of this game instead of doing the 70-30 split that all the platforms ask for, which is kind of, the balls these people have, right? I mean, like, holy cow. Because
there's not many people that could even attempt it.
No, like, that's the crazy thing is that not being on Google Play is not quite as bad as being like, oh, we're jailbreak only, but it's certainly in that same aisle somewhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just can't.
Yeah, it's.
I can't imagine.
Yeah, so, there's so many things with this Well, I heard it, when we heard it this morning, it instantly sparked debate in the office. Everybody started, you know, is it good? Is it bad? What does this mean for the future of everything? I mean. First of all, like you said, goes Epic, like giving it a shot. Let's see. I'm very much a fan of like, I don't know, like poke and prod things in one direction. Then I like to step back and just watch it happen. And this is kind of, I feel like I just want to watch. I just want to see how this plays out. Cause there's definitely an aspect of, you know, discoverability. Like will the people who are into Fortnite, you know, the hardcores are going to figure it out, obviously, but the average person that's like, oh, I've heard of Fortnite, and then they download it, would they ever find it otherwise if it wasn't in the storefront that they look for other stuff in, right? Like, that's one thing that's like, you know, would they ever have the wherewithal to say, you know, oh, I'm going to actually just Google it versus just look in Google Play? Like, there's definitely going to be a weird, I don't know, it depends on how bad you want it. Obviously, people really want it. There's no question based on the numbers they're doing to find the installer and the loader. Because, I mean, they're really breaking new ground here. This is the first the first really of its kind that is a game that's doing this, that has this much traction behind it. Maybe the first ever, I can't say that, but you know, it's going to be interesting to see how, you know, because there's the whole debate about having 30% cut is a whole,
right?
Yeah, it's high, but it's also like the necessary evil that we always have accepted as developers, because the exposure, right? It's like, would, you know, if you made, say you're dealing with, you know, $60 million in revenue, $60 million, say is your number, that they would get from doing this on the side without Google Play. Could they have made $100 million on Google Play and then you lose $30 million in the cut, but then you're actually left with 70, so you're left with 10 more,
yeah,
right? Like, where is that number? Is that going to play out? Is kind of the interesting thing to me is financially, is it going to be better in the end, or is the exposure loss worse for them? That's what I'm, that's the big thing I'm curious about.
Well, I think like through like the viral nature of like how huge Fortnite has become with kids and stuff, that like, so think back to when like Flappy Golf was so big. Like if you couldn't get Flappy Golf on Google Play and you couldn't find it like at school or whatever, and you asked like your friend that had it, they would just tell you, oh, just go to noodlecake.com. Like you don't get it on Google Play.
Yeah.
Like that would be a seamless spread of information. So I think like you don't necessarily like need to be a Fortnite maybe to have traction here. You just need to have like that level of like social viralness, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you see that?
I guess the biggest thing is I just don't know. No, I totally do. And it's just, I just don't know. And I mean, nobody knows. I can't quantify this, but it's just how many organic users would have just downloaded if they saw it off the store versus the viralness of it. You know, like schools is one thing, but you know, we're not in schools. Say yeah. I was on an Android phone, I wouldn't know to Google it, right? To download it. If I never saw it on Google Play, I don't think I would do it, because it's so ingrained, right? They're really breaking the culture here. So it's going to be interesting to see how this all pans out. And it's funny because, you know, this is essentially the Google Android platform's openness coming back to bite them in the ass now.
Yeah.
And having, you know, like iOS locked their shit down. Like you cannot third-party resell on the App Store. So this is a non-issue for them essentially at this point, because, yeah, you know, you can't access the devices any other way. So it's an interesting, like, hey, we're the open platform, we'll let you do whatever you want. Oh shit, now the biggest game in the world is leaving us, and yeah, there's nothing we can do about it, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess I don't see it as being that big of an issue, because like, you know, when you look back at like the launch of Steam with Half-Life 2, right? Like everyone was like, oh, this is crazy. Like, mm-hmm, why the hell are you guys like doing this whole separate thing? Like, I just want to buy your game from, you know, Electronics Boutique or whatever the hell, wherever, yep, you bought your PC games from at the time. And it seemed really weird. But Steam since has become like the dominant platform to get games, because they position themselves as like, this is where you get games. Like this is where you get the hottest game that's out right now, and this is where you get all the best games coming out in the future. So I think that the Epic, you know, the Fortnite installer morphing into the Epic launcher or Epic App Store potentially hosting shit that's on Unreal Engine is a real interesting thing to think about, right? I mean, because like, would, yeah, you guys put your stuff up on Google Play if it was like, if you were building something in Unreal and, you know, as just like effectively a value add for that license that you paid for your Unreal Engine, like you just get free distribution or distribution with like a 8812 cut, like their asset store?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's always the big thing with like supporting third-party stores is always, does the overhead of supporting the store, you know, the hours, supporting a store is still takes time, right? So does that actually pan out from a financial standpoint for selling? It's never easy as just saying, oh, click a button and it's on the store. There's, right, there's more to it than that. But the thing that I'm not sure about, and this is, you know, where I believe I'm not 100% convinced that Epic is going to open this up as a full app store. This is where, you know, your comment about Steam comes into play, in my opinion, but more on the counter side of what Steam has become recently. So yes, when Steam launched, it was that de facto place.
Right.
But now every AAA game, for the most part, is like they're doing their own launchers. You've got the Ubisoft launchers, you've got Origin, you've got all this stuff. But, you know, Blizzard's got their own stuff. You don't go to Steam to get the AAA titles. And what's interesting is as these gaps start to get bridged of, like, you know, especially with systems like the Switch and stuff. And I guarantee, you know, Xbox and Sony are going to be following suit with the next iterations of the console. This whole, like, shifting of mobile console experiences becoming one. I mean, we've seen it from day one. You know, the iPhones have been getting more powerful and the consoles seem to be getting smaller. And it's like, at some point in time, we're going to be bridging this gap here that these third party, you know, these big giant AAA studios, these third party studios are just going to be like, you know what? Screw it. We're going to make our own launcher for everything. So then now you've got this Android home screen that's full of like 15 launchers, and effectively you're going to be segregating all your users across, you know, these multiple platforms. And then you have this whole thing where I mentioned this on Twitter to you this morning, this idea that potentially what could end up happening in a weird way is that iOS could become the current Steam for mobile, in the sense that as an indie developer, you can't do your own launcher. You don't have the exposure, so you're relying on the storefronts, where Google might become so fragmented that the users are going so many different places that it makes more sense just to launch on iOS only. And that's your Steam. And that's your, because if you go to Steam now, they've got PUBG. Yeah, that's their thing.
Right.
But like, they don't have, you know, all these giant AAA releases on there. So they're gone now. And it's become this like haven for like indie development. So, but that's because it's a centralized place where the users are going. So is that going to happen with mobile? Is there going to be like an indie store that's separate from Google Play? Potentially. I mean, discoverability on the Play Store right now is one of the biggest issues I have with Google Play. I hate the way that their algorithms dictate everything that you're seeing from a feature standpoint. There's no, like, there's curation, but it needs to be better, in my opinion. I hate the way they group new and updated games into the same category. So you're looking at the same 17 games over and over again because they're always being updated. So I don't care how many updates the Gardenscape has, like, show me something new. Yeah. And I think that's an issue with their storefront right now. So having, you know, a potential, maybe, you know, highly curated storefront for indie games on Android that's separate from Google Play, someone might do it. I mean, it could be a thing that happens.
I guess I just like don't.
It's breaking new ground. That's very interesting.
Yeah, I guess I just like don't really see the multiple launcher thing being that big of a deal. I mean, because like, so I'm recording this on my PC right now. I've got in my system tray, I've got Steam, I've got GOG, the EA one, and Uplay. And like, that covers basically the games that I play. Oh, I have the Battle.net launcher too, but that's not running right now. You know, so it's just like,
yeah,
I don't know. It's not like I have a million.
But here's the thing though. That's the games you play. So do you go find more games? You know what I mean? Like if you have all of your launchers on your phone and it's like all the Ubisoft stuff you really like and all these certain things, would you go to Google Play anymore? Because you have all the stuff you play in another, you know, like that's the thing. And then like effectively Google Play might start taking a hit from like the users are just not coming there to find content, because unless you want to get the hottest new Gardenscape update, there's nothing else there for you.
Well, but
not to rip on Gardenscape too much, but it's
guess,
just the top of mind because I always see it.
I guess like my question there is like, how many people in the mobile space right now are still actively going to the storefronts, like looking for content on the regular, you know, like it seems like across the board,
definitely not as much as it used to be.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, when I talk, like I'm super nosy about like what games people, like my friends are playing and, you know, people that I don't consider like techie kind of gamey people, you know, that I'm friends with, because like, I always like that to me is like getting the temperature of the water of like, what's the normal person doing on their phone now. Right. And at least amongst my like social circle, people seem to have like major download fatigue where I feel like, and, like, so yeah. here's a perfect example. Like it's not even really limited to games. So I discovered this app called Tunity, which I posted about on Touch. It's a really cool thing where you basically launch the app and like let it record a little bit of like a TV at a bar or something like that. And then it'll sync up with that TV and stream the audio from it, provided it's like an over the air channel or like basic cable channel, which really, really cool app, which, I mean, like, how many times have you been to a bar and been like, oh, shit, I wish I had the sound for this TV, you know? It solves that problem, for which I was like, dude, this is amazing. Like, this is one of those apps that, like, remember when the iPhone was new, like, all these apps kept coming out? You're like, oh, my God, like, I can't believe, like, you know, this functionality just got extended to this device that I carry around, you know? So that's kind of the way that I felt about this. And like, as I was telling my friends about it, they were like, and I don't care, dude, I have enough apps. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't need another one kind of thing. And then it's like that sort of thing seems to have persisted across games as well, as particularly as, you know, KetchUp and other people like that are just like dumping games on the App Store, like as quick as they can to make them feel like very disposable and stuff. So I almost feel like maybe it would be better if there was just like these individual launchers that just had these really huge games that would have big marketing pushes that would actually get people excited about them. Maybe. I don't.
Yeah, I mean, that's all well, and I agree, that's all well and good for the Ubisofts and of the world, right? But what do you do if you're the noodle cake of the world and you can't,
you have the noodle cake launcher, of course.
The level of, well, that's the thing, right? Like, are we gonna have to go down that road? It's like, or just the one-man teams, like Zach Gage, if he's launching a game by himself, it's like, how is he gonna get his games discovered if only people are using launchers now because they don't care about going to the stores anymore? Like, there's still that, got to be some level of like, where do I find something new that isn't, you know, the biggest thing out there? So it poses a weird question for indie developers, which is kind of our wheelhouse, right? So it's that's where we're trying to figure out, like, yeah, we're still years removed from this, but we see it. You know, we see the same thing happening with downloads across the board, and most cases are down. They're just, it's not the same, doesn't have the same power it used to anymore, because the fatigue is set in. People just, they have their set of stuff that they deal with, and that's just it. They don't buy new stuff, new games anymore. So it's definitely a harder sell. If anything, what might end up happening is you're going to see less small scale indie games being released potentially too, because they just don't have the marketing push. Like, the way you market a mobile indie game might have to be more in line with something bigger. Like, you're going to have to shop it at conferences and packs and all that stuff for a year. You're going to have to build buzz just to get, like, you know, Flip Flop Solitaire 2 some notice, or else you're going to be screwed. You know, it's an interesting like disruption of the industry, and how it's going to play out, who knows? I mean, if they open it or not, if it's just for Epic Games, I mean, that's going to be the first teller, I think, as to where this is going to go.
Yeah.
You know, are they going to say this is something for Unreal Games we're going to allow, or is it just going to be, you know, it's Epic only? But then, like I said, is that going to stop any other third party service from being like, hey, here's our, you know, here's the GOG store on Android now, and it's, you know, a bunch of indie games or old classic games or whatever.
Right. I don't know. I just think you could have like all sorts of launchers that like are like fit their own little niche, you know, like I could see like that fit also with the brand image of like the publisher potentially. Like, you know, I could very easily see like a Devolver Digital launcher, and that's just where you know to go, where to get like weird little indie games and stuff, you know, because that's kind of the brand they've built, you know, which I don't know. I think it's a fascinating future that I'm pretty excited for, because I feel like Google and Apple really have had it too good for too long, and have been sitting on, you know, effectively monopolies over these platforms that just kind of aren't really worth the 30% anymore, aside from that just being your only option.
Yeah. So. Well, it's just an issue of scale, in my opinion. Like, you know, to get to the level to be able to support your own storefront, you have to be, like, you got to be a Fortnite or something at first, essentially. Like, it's just going to be an entirely different way of marketing your stuff, because you're, you know, everybody's so reliant from an indie standpoint on the store feature placements, right? That's your bread and butter. I mean, even though the feature placements can vary wildly in success and how, you know, it works and everything, but otherwise it's like, how are you driving people to find your product in a way that you could get, you know, a free banner from Apple just for chatting with the editors and setting something up. I mean, that's an invaluable thing for developers that we work with, to have feature placement like that. If that didn't happen, you know, where those games would just disappear into the night and you never even hear about it. So it's an economy of scale issue, that it's like, there's gotta be people, especially when you're dealing with, you know, is this going to change? Like, if you got a premium game that isn't on the store that you're hoping people will come to your launcher to download, I mean, you've been making pennies on the day, and you're not going to support your studio that way. So there's it's just interesting. It's a very interesting thing. I see pros and cons on both sides of the coin here. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how Google replies to this too, if they're going to do anything
right
at all. Like,
well, I mean, the interesting thing here is that, like, if it doesn't pan out, like, there's nothing stopping Epic from being like, all right, cool, well, it's on Google Play too now.
You know, exactly.
Like, yeah. You know, there's no downside for them. I in all my communications with them, they've been very clear, like, this is just a Fortnite installer. There's no bigger plans, like, all this other stuff. But, like, Tencent owns a large stake of Epic, and you cannot convince me that they're not in their ear, you know, like Grima Wormtongue and Lord of the Rings being like, come on, like, let's take over the world. Yeah. Fuck these Google guys. Like, we got it. We got the biggest game. Like, let's go wild. So
yeah, for sure.
That's
because I mean, WeChat, like Tencent stuff over in China, the WeChat and QQ channels. I mean, that's those things dwarf anything going on.
Like, they run China
when it comes to numbers. Yeah, it's nuts. Like, I mean, we've started to just get a taste of some of that. Zplay has been helping us get, and the big thing right now is actually putting HTML5 games up inside of those chat platforms. Like, that's kind of the hot thing going on right now over there. Because I'm not sure how familiar you are with the government regulations and stuff happening.
I try to follow
China,
it because it's just very interesting to me as an American.
It's nuts. It's like, you get, like, you know, basically to get a game launched in China, if anybody doesn't know this, you actually have to get the game approved by the government now. And that whole process can take upwards of 3 to 6 months, maybe even longer. And you have to have a team on the ground in China to help you do that. Like, they won't even look at submissions. So it's like, you have to, you know, it was one of the reasons why this acquisition and stuff that we did with Zplay was needed, because it was, we have to open this door to our developers, and there's literally no other way to do it unless we, like, set up shop in China. So having these channels open, and then what ends up happening is you got to wait like 6 months and get the game out, you know, and go through all this, like, hoopla of then dealing with 10 or 15 stores over there that all have their own requirements and that kind of stuff. And that's just of, like, the ones you want to hit up. But, and they all have, like, some of them are premium, some have to be free to play, some are ad supported, you know, it's kind of all over the map. So again, as a publisher, that's what we help deal with. but now the big thing is these HTML5 games. So Tencent has two chat platforms. They've got WeChat, which is, like, obviously the mother load, and then they've got QQ, which is another version of it. And Leap On, Bouncy Hoops, and Infingers 2 are all games of ours that Leap On is actually in the QQ channel right now in China through Tencent's publishing thing. And we're seeing, like, download numbers that are bananas over there.
Yeah.
But it's an HTML5 version of the game. And the reason they're doing that is because the HTML5 stuff can actually launch within the app, right? So it's like they live inside WeChat over there. Everything is done from payments to social networking to whatever, and now gaming. And those games don't require the Chinese government regulation numbers. So because there's a weird loophole going on with HTML5 because it's a web format, right? So you don't actually have to have this, like, regulation done. So suddenly there's been this giant shift of, like, if you want to get games out, do it HTML5 version and, you know, get it out on these stores. And I mean, in the end, it's still Tencent that's, like, the gatekeepers, and, like, you want to be rich? Okay, let's turn on the users and, like, just dump a bunch of users in your lap. Like, that's, they have that ability over there because they're so huge. But otherwise, that's the only way that they're, like, so there's just, like, really, there's a strong appetite right now for, like, quick, you know, voodoo-y, catch-up-y style mobile games in China that are easily portable to HTML5, get them in these stores and get people playing and do, like, kind of ad revenue based. So it's like a whole other world of stuff going on over there with Tencent and how they're operating. But we're just starting to see the benefits, and it's you can understand why people do it, because it's becoming quite lucrative. So
like, what kind of specific stuff does the government approval process, like, entail? Is it just like the App Store approval, more or less, like looking for something naughty and stuff like that?
No, it's way crazier. So you have to rip out every language that isn't Chinese. So it has to be everything
so
has
Chinese
to be Chinese.
Only? Like, no
Chinese only.
Okay.
No, nothing. You have to remove all third-party services that aren't game-related. So in-app purchases, ad networks, you know, social networking, all that stuff has to be ripped out. It has to be just a core shell of the game. And then you actually have to submit, like, a package that has, like, the game. You have to submit an actual code snippet of like the game's code itself, like I don't know, 10 pages of code or some crazy thing. You have to submit all like the artwork and stuff, and then there's like a whole pitch process. I've only been privy to like the pieces we have to supply Zplay so that they could do the applications for it. But then they get, and then it gets into this queue of just like government auditors. I mean, that's like a job for the government, is to sit and audit these games to make sure they're legit, because the piracy and the like just bullshit apps that were plaguing, you know, China were just getting out of control. So they had to step in with the government.
Yeah, I remember a few years ago, and this might actually have been 5+ years ago now, like talking to developers about getting their game into China. And the conversation was basically like, dude, I had these weird like Chinese storefront people hit me up and they're like, hey, we already have your game in our store. Do you want to like make it official or something like that? And it's like, all right, so you've already pirated it and you're hitting me up. Why? Well, kind of thing. So
yeah, it's wild.
I don't know. It's hard to believe that like there's whatever the Canadian equivalent of where your driver's license is, like that kind of people existing in China, but all they're doing is looking at game source and stuff. Like,
It's crazy, man. Just the level of corruption and stuff that's happened over there. Like because of the acquisition with Zplay, like there's like auditors they never did end up coming, but they were supposed to come to just prove that we were a company. Like they had to, like that we weren't just a shell corp. Like they were coming to Canada to like walk through our office to like say, this is a real place of business. You know, like that's like how crazy stuff is, like for just the amount of level of corruption and stuff that happens. So I guess the government just had enough when it came to apps and they locked it down. So yeah, if you want to launch anything over there now, you got to go through this insane approval process. That's like, it's harder than launching on console at this point. So
I guess the conclusion, if you want your game on China or in China, hit up Ryan Newcake.
we can help you out. We can get it out over there. So
awesome, man, that is super, but it's like, you have to go through that because there's so many people in these Asian markets that saying like, oh, I don't want to bother is detrimental to the success of anything
man,
you're doing.
It's bananas. Like when they launched Leap on QQ, which isn't even as popular as WeChat, they're moving it up. QQ is kind of their like test bed, I think. And I think it's Leap on is moving into WeChat eventually at some point here. Like we were getting 2 to 5 million daily active users on like a tiny little, like the daily actives. Like that's nuts for that game. Like I don't know if we ever had 5 million total downloads in North America, but like to have that many daily actives, like it was like, holy shit. Like the numbers we're dealing with here are wildly out of proportion compared to North America. Like it's crazy. So, but then it's also a necessity, like that, you know, the right moves over there could support our company for, you know, we could be like that band that's huge in Japan or else. Like that could be what we end up being, is just like, you know, huge in China because that's where the money is, right? And that's where the people are. It's just, it's a scale thing. There's just millions and millions of more people. So even if you have a 10%, you know, of this, you know, it, like if you have the same market penetration, 10% of it in China is 10, 15, 30 times the amount of people than it would be here, because it's just, there's that many more people, right? So it's crazy. That's a whole thing. We could talk about China for hours if we wanted to.
That's crazy though. Like that's good to know, I guess, for anyone listening that's curious about, because I feel like a lot of mobile developers just do like, what's like the big seven languages, like English, Chinese, Japanese.
E-figs, as they call it. Yeah.
Then you just check every box on iTunes. You're like, release it. I don't care. You know, but that's
the thing. It's like iOS isn't even that huge in China. Like, I mean, it's big, it's doing okay, but like, it's nothing compared to what Android is in China and like India and stuff too. Like, it's a whole different ballgame over there. So, you know, it's a lot. And like, they don't have money the same way either. Like nobody has credit cards linked up to their accounts. So it's all done via carrier billing. So your AT&T bill would have your game purchases on it essentially. And that's being charged based on data. So that's why HTML5 is so appealing, because the game sizes are so tiny that they can actually play them and not worry about downloading like 500 megs of, you know, Suzy Cube assets. So it's like they can,
that's,
you know,
so wild. Cause like
that works over there
with Verizon here. Like I'll just, like if I'm out somewhere by myself, like I'll just have like Twitch open on my phone. Just watch video for an hour. Like I don't care. Like
I know. Yeah.
It's fine.
It's crazy. Yeah, it's a whole different thing over there. So, but it's interesting though, because having Tencent have their fingers in Fortnite so deeply, it's just, yeah, like, yeah, I don't know what kind of like model maybe they would be pushing them to do this whole, you know, let's just like do our own stores. Let's just do the same thing we're doing in China, except here.
How do they not?
Got the biggest product. So,
yeah. It's weird. So I don't know. I guess we'll have to see how this, this all evolves over time. This was just announced today. Fortnite on Android is coming, air quotes, summer, which I guess is kind of barreling towards an end. So probably in the next month or so, I guess. I mean, the version I fiddled around with like seemed feature complete. It worked. I don't know.
Yeah.
So yeah, well, cool. Thanks so much for being my replacement for Jared this week. Really, really appreciate it. And
no worries.
So yeah, I guess thanks for listening to this week's episode of Touch Arcade Show. We'll catch you next week with another episode, hopefully with Jared surviving his trip from Sweden. So
I don't know. I can always come back if you want to talk more dev stuff. That's
yeah,
fine. We'll I can be your insider, industry insider.
We'll just call up Ryan Noodlecake Insider to China and get the pulse on Asia.
Yeah.
All right, cool, everyone. Thanks so much for listening. Have a good weekend, and we'll catch you next week on another episode of Touch Arcade Show.